The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guests on Off the Shelf are Bob Lohfeld, CEO of Lohfeld Consulting, Beth Wingate, who's a managing director at Lohfeld, and Lisa Paith, who's a principal consultant also at Lohfeld Consulting. And this is going to be an interesting show. We're going to be talking about proposal preparation, going to market, things you need to think about as a company. Bob, Lisa, and Beth, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good to be here, Rich.
Well, I'm looking forward to this conversation. It's going to be really interesting. And I guess just to open it up, can you talk a little bit about what Lohfeld Consulting does? What does your company do in support of government contractors or competitors in the market?
Sure. We have five core areas of expertise, Roger. We have proposal services where we provide the management, writing, subject matter experts, graphics, editing, desktop publishing, all that kind of thing. Capture management, proposal operations, and proposal process improvement support. Training, we have a number of training courses in capture management, proposal management, writing, proposal evaluation, and then market strategy and pipeline development. And then underlying all of that is our business acquisition automation support through our capture and proposal software called WinCenter.
Okay, and that's a lot of stuff.
Keeps us busy.
Yeah, it is busy. And, right now it piques my interest on, what do proposal consultants actually do, like on a daily basis? Could you maybe talk about, how you support your clients? Maybe even you could take it from the timeline from, there's an acquisition coming down the pike. Mm-hmm. It's pre-solicitation phase through a little bit of the competition and that sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah. We roll up our sleeves and do just about anything the customer asks us to do throughout the entire business development lifecycle, whether that's helping them with their capture strategy, making a go, no-go decision, doing all the prep work before the proposal comes, the RFP hits the street, such as solutioning, getting ready for the proposal that's about to hit the street through, resumes, past performance, all of those things you need to do to get ready, managing the proposal. Often we go in to write sections of the proposal, review sections of the proposal. We also do post-mortem reviews to help companies figure out why they lost a proposal and help them implement lessons learned and best practices as a result. It's really a great job because we work with companies at all levels of success and growth, small to large, in all lines of business. And really what they all have in common is recognizing the value of bringing in an outside expert, whether that outside expert is filling a role on the capture or proposal team or coming in more as an unbiased third party to take a look at what they're doing and make recommendations for improvement.
And that, just to pick up on that and why companies do use consultants, do you guys specialize in particular agencies or, focusing on best value? When somebody comes to you, what are you looking at with regard to that company, whether they're a good client, bad client, what makes a good client, bad client, and how you approach them and talk to them about where they want to go?
So in terms of market specialization, we are very much across the board. We do civilian agencies, defense agencies. We also have a TS facility clearance, so we work in the classified programs. And the companies come to us for a couple of reasons. One, that some companies just run out of human talent needed to execute a proposal, and now is a particularly busy time for everyone in this year-end rush.
Yes.
So they exhaust their internal resources. The other reason they come to us is I think they look at their internal team and they say, we've got a good team that's okay grinding out routine proposals. But here's a must-win, and we need to go outside and get the top talent to come in and help with that.
So I have a question. When you mentioned you do across the board civilian versus DoD. Can you generalize, like, you know, what's the biggest difference between a DoD approach to an acquisition versus a civilian agency, or is it more GSA versus DHS?
It's all of them are writing competitive procurements, following the FAR and different interpretations of the FAR or extensions of the FAR. The DoD, I think, is very well structured in how they evaluate proposals. They're well disciplined in how they write RFPs. We see some civilian agencies that have that characteristic, and others not so much. So maybe you have to be a little more insightful with some of the civilian agencies as to what they're looking
right,
for.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. That's sort of my impression as well, that the civilian agencies aren't quite as consistent or disciplined as DoD, because, you know, DoD has, I mean, buying weapon systems and stuff is really, really important. It's important to everybody, mm-hmm. but it's really important to them, and they have to do a, you know, have a thorough process.
And the weapon system buys, large defense systems have a very rigorous acquisition schedule. They adhere to that schedule. They're disciplined to execute it. Civilian agencies, we see more task order, IDIQ work. Everything looks like a task order to the procurement shop, and they're pushing a lot of stuff through these vehicles. So a little different flavor to it.
And I think they have a lack of resources at a lot of the civilian agencies. They right. don't have the experienced procurement staff to put out good solicitations. So you see a lot of solicitations at the street that seem like drafts rather than final, and they end up having to revise them a lot. They get hundreds of questions. The due dates get extended. So it's not right. a very efficient process.
Yeah, maybe that's why there's the, I guess, GSA is the government version of Lofell Consulting, or not, I don't know. I guess assisted services at GSA, right. I don't right. know. I don't know if we want to put them on the same par, right?
Well, I'd say we like GSA a lot.
Okay. This might be a somewhat self-serving question, right? But when a company's thinking about hiring a consultant, what do they think about, or what would you recommend companies think about?
I think they really need to think about the roles that need to be filled, why they're bringing somebody in, what expectations do they have, what kind of processes do they have in place, do they have processes at all, or do they want us to bring in someone who can guide them through, mentor their team. That's something that I've particularly enjoyed doing as a consultant, is mentoring teams that haven't done this before or maybe haven't followed best practices before. They really need to work with us to scope out expectations and what needs to happen in the engagement, whether it's one person proposal manager coming in or if it's the whole team from soup to nuts. We really have to have good, clear expectations and good communication among the team.
Okay, so I got a basic question for me as a layperson. Consider me a layperson. So we've talked a lot about proposal services, writing services. So what's the difference between proposal services that management writing or subject matter experts and capture management, Bob?
So capture is a defined, repeatable, managed process that every company should execute in advance of the RFP being released. And it begins with creating a capture plan that begins with where you are today and creates a vision of where you need to be when the RFP is released. And build out that plan, build out a capture team, resource it, go deeply, understand what the customer needs, what their mission is about, their goals, their objectives. Begin conceptualizing a solution before the RFP comes out. Don't solution after the RFP is out. Begin early. Try to position that solution with a customer. Try to shape the procurement so it's advantageous to your firm. Look at who your competition is and what you need to do to outdistance the competition. Create a real win strategy that you can execute against. Build out a teaming strategy and get ahead of the game on that. Build a pricing strategy, because price is hugely important in all these procurements today. And
Absolutely.
Then look at risk. So there's basically 10 steps in capture that all of them, if they're executed well, they become great predictors of whether or not you'll be successful in the
Right.
bid.
And your company helps people put that capture management sort of infrastructure in place and how to work through that.
We help companies define the process, optimize the process, measure how well they execute it, and then we substantiated in a software application that gives them the discipline and the rigor to continue to execute it on their own.
That's cool. You know what? Right now, we do have to take our first break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Bob Lofeld, Lisa Paith and Beth Wingate of Lowfell Consulting. And when we come back, we'll start. I'll ask some questions, or we'll look at the trends in proposal consulting right now. What's hot? I mean, Bob did mention price. That seems to be a big deal these days. We'll be back. This is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Bob Lowfeld, Beth Wingate, and Lisa Paith of Lowfeld Consulting. And we've been we're talking about proposal consulting, supporting capture management, all the aspects of going to market and winning federal contracts. And this segment, we're going to look a little about what the trends are in proposal consulting. And so, and I'm going to start off with you, Bob. Sort of what are the big picture sort of mega trends of proposal consulting?
Well, the mega trend for sure is that the government's budget has been contracting, as everybody knows in this town. And the consequence of that is that fewer dollars are being competed for by lots of companies. And the competitive standard has slowly crept up as the market has declined. So we tell companies, you know, through no fault of your own, your win rate has just gone down. And what you did to serve yourselves well 2 or 3 years ago is no longer adequate to compete today. We're also seeing shifts in the way deals are procured. And Lisa, you could talk about some of the mega trends on the GWAC, IDIQ
sure.
side of the business.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing that more work is moving to multiple award vehicles, whether it's a government-wide acquisition contract such as Alliant or individual agency IDIQs. You know, the government knows that these vehicles are a very cost-effective, efficient way to procure services. So we're seeing fewer and fewer single large procurements and instead these multiple award vehicles. The issue here is that a lot of companies spend a lot of time and money trying to win a GWAC or an IDIQ without putting a capture strategy together for how they're going to eventually win task orders under the multiple award contract. And then they end up with an empty vehicle. You know, they've spent all this capture time getting the vehicle, and then they don't have anyone who goes to market the vehicle to their customers or brings work to the vehicle. So really, before you bid on a multiple award contract, you really have to understand the nature of that vehicle. Is it a government-wide one where you have to market it to your various customer agencies and bring them to the vehicle? Or is it an individual agency IDIQ where you really have to know that agency and its customers?
So, so Lisa, it sounds so a big mistake is a company who just says, okay, I got the contract award, and then, the work should just flow to me, right?
Right.
Is that a function of like the BD guys who go after the contract at the highest level, and but there's no sort of strategic thought about the task order competitions where the money is really spent? Is that underlying why that happens?
Yeah, that can be part of it. And another issue is that because these multiple award vehicles have become so popular, everyone bids on them. And the government tends, in many cases, to award the overall vehicle to too many bidders. You know, they want to avoid protests, or they're not going to bother to weed it down till the task order time. So you're competing against so many other companies that perhaps your win chances are not good. The other issue is that it takes so long to award a lot of these vehicles that the original proponent in the company has often left. So by the time the vehicle's awarded, nobody's assigned to be the capture manager for winning task orders. Okay. And it just becomes an empty vehicle that really doesn't help the company at all.
And I think another important thing, another aspect of this, I wrote an article about it a number of years ago, is that you need to have a task order factory set up within your organization.
Definitely.
To be able to respond to these. Task order proposals can be, frankly, as huge as any other proposal. They may be for a smaller or larger dollar amount, but you've got to have a factory where everybody knows the process. They come in to the hopper, they come out the bottom, and in between you've got systems and processes set up to be able to respond quickly to these, especially, you know, if it's a 5 or 10 day turnaround and it's almost a bigger endeavor to put something together like that quickly. So you've got to have people out getting intelligence for you about the opportunity. Like Lisa said, the capture that goes into it, as well as the proposal staff and the support staff to put the documents together.
It was like that capture management at the task order level.
Yes,
is that
definitely.
Yeah.
It is. That's how you win them.
We exercise the same discipline at the vehicle level as we do at the task order level. And as we find, there's a real strong correlation between how much you know about that task and how likely you are to win. So deep dive into understanding what the customer needs and solutioning from it.
Right. And you have to be very agile, too, in how you review your task order proposals. A lot of companies try to apply the same process that they would to a 30 or 60 day turn to a 5 or 10 day turn. You really have to do more of an iterative review process rather than going through the big formal color team reviews that you might have for a longer bid.
Yeah, that's a great point. I do have a question, Bob, in this sort of trends. Are you seeing, I guess, what's your views on contract duplication? A lot of these multiple award IDIQs are for the same or similar services, mm-hmm. whether it's a government-wide one, which makes more sense to have government-wide ones, or individual agency ones that duplicate what's already existing out there, either from GSA or NIH or NASA SOUP in the IT world.
We look at this issue of duplication. Seems like every 5 or 10 years, it becomes very topical. My experience has been that over time, you really don't know which vehicles will be successful and which ones won't. And they sort of ebb and flow in favor. And they'll start out looking really good, and then another one will come along, and it'll take market share. And 5 years down the road, a brand new one pops up, and it starts competing for market share. So in a way, they compete against each other. And I think overall, over the long term, it's a good process. Where it departs from reality, I think, is procurements like C4D that ran off and awarded 2,500 contracts. To me, that's really not a competition. That's just an enrollment process. And right. Someone should challenge that, actually. Rethink C4D.
It's almost, I guess it's more like a schedule almost, the GSA schedule GSA schedule of about 18,000 contracts, right? Across much broader spectrum of products and services.
So I don't know where competition ends and schedules begin, but somewhere in that continuum, they've crossed over and they become really enrollment processes.
Right. So it's a lot harder to win. There's a lot of stuff going through task order, multiple award, IDIQ, task orders type competitions. So what are you, when you advise your clients, what are you telling them to do differently in this market in order to win or to be competitive?
Several things. One is start with a good plan and know what you want to accomplish. And the foundation strategy is, if you're in the IT business, you have a Schedule 70. That's your underpinning. You begin seeking out multiple award vehicles so you can play in some of these markets that are captive to these vehicles. And then you move to the larger single award plays. So you begin with a balanced strategy. And with that strategy, you identify deals early. We develop a pipeline for companies and then help them execute capture so that they're really well prepared to win when the RFP comes out. And then we work hard with them to show them how to write a great proposal. And there's a lot of skill in it. A lot of specialization pays off. A lot of knowledge can pay off there.
Right. What is strength-based solutioning? Is that what you're talking about there?
It is.
So that's how you articulate your win strategy, your value proposition that you've worked so hard to form during the capture stage. And the reason we advise companies to start with strengths is because when the government ultimately reviews your proposal, the only way you can win is to have the most strengths and either no weaknesses or the least weaknesses. So if you start with the strengths the government is looking for, features with substantiation that bring benefits that discriminate your company, if you start there and you map all the elements of your solution to strengths and make sure you're allocating the strengths to those evaluation factors that have the most points associated with them, then you're going to have a good value proposition that results in a win.
Okay, I got another question. It'd be cliche, right? A picture's worth a thousand words. So what is, visual communication, how important is that in the proposal process? It seems to me it can be really effective if it's done well.
Mm-hmm. If you ask government source selection officials whether they're influenced by how nice the proposal looks, they'll say no. But they really are, because it's human nature. If you're faced with a page full of dense text, you're immediately going to start zoning out, falling asleep. If you're faced with a page that's attractive looking with good graphics, good highlighting of the key points, enough white space so you don't feel like you're falling asleep and you can take some notes in the margin, it's just human nature that you're going to want to read that proposal. You're going to get more out of it because good visual communication points the government evaluator to those items that you want them to see. In other words, your strengths.
Right.
It helps them score the proposal more easily. They can skim through and find the answers. You know,
right.
Evaluators,
they'll have the reference right there. It's
yeah, the evaluators don't want to read every word of your proposal, nor are they going to have time, most likely. So they need to be able to find what they need to score quickly.
But what we find in talking to evaluators is about 70% of them will read the text and sort of look at the graphics. 30% of them don't really read the text. They flip through it. They look at all the tables, the charts, the flow diagrams.
That's a big number, 30%.
It's a lot. Yeah. And particularly engineers will do this. They'll go to the data side of it. And we tell companies we have to communicate our message across both channels, sort of two frequencies here, one for the visual reader and one for the textual reader. And then the ultimate standard for us, and we have standards that we practice to, is somebody has to be able to skim the proposal and basically score it. Some of these bids, they're getting over 100 proposals submitted, and the evaluation team has to be able to go through it quickly.
That's a good idea. That's a good test. Can you skim it and score?
It is.
Skim and score, huh?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Hey, we do have to take our next break. When we come up, my guests today are Bob Lohfeld, Beth Wingate, and Lisa Paith of Lohfeld Consulting Group. And when we come back, we'll continue this discussion about capture management, what companies can do differently, and just how do you assess the quality of proposals? How good is a company's proposal? You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Bob Lohfeld, Beth Wingate, and Lisa Paith of Lohfeld Consulting Group. And we're talking about the current sort of market, what the trends are with regard to proposal consulting and winning proposals. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about that you guys is a tool you use is proposal quality standards. Or in the previous segment, Lisa, you had talked about, strength-based solutioning.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob, I know one of the aspects of how you get to, great quality proposal is to these seven quality measures and proposal quality standards. So I'm going to ask you to start. What is that and how does it work for your clients?
When we talk to companies, we do these surveys to find out how good their proposals really are. And the results are sort of shocking. We find that basic proposal should be at least responsive and compliant to the solicitation, and only about 15% of the companies in the market are consistently achieving that metric. We find maybe another 35% will achieve it, but not consistently. Another 35% don't, and the balance didn't even know it was important. So on the whole, proposals aren't very good in the industry, and we've established a set of quality measures that we use. There's seven of them, and Lisa is the author of that quality metric. So let me pass the baton here to Lisa and tell us about seven factors and how we use it to help companies improve their proposals.
Okay. Yeah, we have seven quality measures that are actually proven to help our customers essentially more than double their win rates if they consistently apply these quality measures. And the quality measures are, number one, compliant. Clearly, the proposal has to be compliant with the instructions, the evaluation criteria, the statement of work. That may seem obvious, yet as Bob mentioned, many proposals fail to even meet this basic measure. Responsiveness. The content has to actually address what the solicitation is requiring. By that, I mean you could have a compliant outline, but the text has nothing to do with the headings. We see that in companies that use a lot of cut and paste. Next is customer focused, and that's really where your capture comes in. Proposal has to focus on what the customer needs. You don't want to be bidding features with benefits that they don't care about. Next is rich in strengths and compelling. The proposal has to offer features with compelling benefits substantiated with evidence. And they will be apparent as strengths to the government evaluator if you explicitly identify how they exceed requirements. So always ask yourself, do our features meet the strength test? Is the value proposition crystal clear? Next is easy to evaluate. We talked about this earlier. The government will use a score sheet, based on the evaluation criteria. So if you create a score sheet yourself based on the evaluation criteria and then try to score your own proposal, can you find everything? Is the proposal clearly cross-referenced? Can the government evaluator who's using the score sheet quickly find everything, not be in a situation where they're searching through the proposal trying to find the things to put in the score sheet? We talked about good visual communication. When the evaluator opens the proposal up, it should look appealing through best practice methods such as graphics and ways to break up text. And finally, the seventh measure, and a very important measure, is well written. So many proposals use passive voice and they don't use consistent conventions. They're certainly not concise.
Like mistakes were made.
Yes, right. Exactly. They may not, you know, they may say, oh, well, we have 100 pages, so I'll just go on and fill up every square inch of text. And then there's also a lot of use of what we call unsubstantiated bragging. And Bob actually wrote an article for Washington Technology on 100 words that will kill your proposal. Things like saying, we're unique, we're best of breed, we have, you know, we're using best practices. They're just empty bragging if you can't substantiate them with proof points. So be aware of these, of overused words and phrases and empty bragging that basically just turns the government evaluator off. They know that everybody's saying that. There's no substantiation behind it.
Okay, so it's much better to actually show why you are best in breed than as opposed to just claim it, right?
Yes,
that's basically
exactly
what you're saying, right?
We find writers claim it when they don't know what to say.
Right, exactly.
There's no there there. Or
best of breed, world-class,
uniquely qualified.
And on and on. Mm-hmm. And all of that ignores what you're really going to do or how you're going to do it.
And that all goes back to the problem of not starting early enough, not having a plan, not having an annotated outline or a writing plan to start with. You've got to, as Lisa said, plan your strengths into the document before you start writing.
Some sort of, Bob, that troubles me is when you went through those stats, and there's a lot of bad proposals out there, right? Which is good for you, right?
But, it is. It creates
great
a great demand for us. But we've talked to some government evaluators and asked them, what do you do with the bad proposals? And they said, we created what we called a wall of shame. And we took pages out of proposals and we stapled them up on the wall so everybody could see how bad they really were. And they'd walk by and laugh and giggle and say, I can't believe a company would submit this. But that's what they're stuck with evaluating, because players aren't playing as well as they should be playing in the market.
Yeah, and I'm curious, are there factors that lead to that? Is it a company doesn't understand the federal market and how proposals work? Is it a lack of bench strength or folks, and they don't come to Lofeld, or is it?
well, that for sure.
You like that ad, right?
Yeah, thank you. One of the things that triggers it's a poor management decision making, where an RFP comes in, management says this looks like a good deal, let's bid it, and the company is completely unprepared. They know nothing about the customer, and yet the proposal team just marches ahead and does the best job they can. But it reads as a pretty shallow proposal when it's all done. That's probably the number one driver of it.
Another driver is just poor handoff from capture to proposals. You might have people out there doing the business development, doing the capture. They know the customer, but they don't articulate the message to the proposal team. And the proposal team then isn't able to articulate the strengths in the proposal.
And that comes back to process. If you don't have a good capture process where you're actually documenting everything and putting it somewhere where other folks can use it, then why bother?
Yeah, I mean, when you went through the seven quality measures, that customer focused one, that handoff, that's kind of, I find that interesting that there isn't that. It's the same thing between like contracting officers and government and program manager. There's this, you know, gulf between the two where they don't communicate as effectively as they should.
Yeah.
And it would seem to me that would go right through your entire proposal, right? I mean, customer focus has got to be the theme of your entire proposal.
And also understanding that there's more than one customer.
Right.
You have the program people, you have the contracting people, you have the budget people. So understanding that there's not just one customer, the customer should be plural. And part of the handoff from capture to proposals has to articulate the needs of all those customers.
Is win rate a good measure of proposal quality or not? Or is that really somebody's average and everybody else is not good? I mean, I'm just curious.
It's the measure everyone wants to use.
And,
what we find is it becomes not a very good measure, because we'll see circumstances where a company wrote a sort of a mediocre proposal and they won. And they won because they dove on price, or they won because no other bidders showed up, or the government hated the other bidders, or the deal was wired for them from the beginning. So a mediocre proposal can carry you to victory, whereas a great proposal, you can submit a great one and you can lose because maybe your past performance really wasn't as good as you thought, and maybe you didn't get the price right. So we've tried to get beyond this idea of every proposal that wins is a great proposal.
And you also help folks, there's all those other factors beyond just the proposal itself that you help inform your clients about, that you just described, whether it's potentially wired for somebody, mm-hmm. you provide support in that area too, right?
We tell the clients, you have to do everything right.
Yeah, right.
And play at the highest level you can possibly play at. But in the end, you got to be a little bit lucky too, that the government evaluates it the way they should evaluate it, that they see as strengths what you believe are really strengths, and that they did a diligent job. So the kind of the weakest link is the ability to evaluate some of these subjective bids. And you just have to be a little lucky to get through and get the victory.
Right. And you know what? We're up on our next break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Bob Lohfeld, Beth Wingate, and Lisa Paith of Lohfeld Consulting. And when we come back, Lisa does some training in this area, and she has some stats on proposals that are compliant and responsive. I'm going to ask her about those real quickly, and then we'll move on to, how best value procurements and tools, and how to improve win rates on those. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Bob Lohfeld, Beth Wingate, and Lisa Paith of Lohfeld Consulting Group. And Lisa, I know you've done some interesting and new innovative training with regard to proposal evaluation for some of your clients. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and how it's helping your clients?
Yes. So through a lot of experience with doing color team reviews, we came to realize that companies really aren't doing effective color team reviews. They're reviewing the proposal from their own perspective rather than trying to mimic how the government is going to evaluate proposals. So I created a new training class that we just premiered this past week that is all from the perspective of how do you as a company evaluate your proposals so you're doing it as a government evaluator and you're truly getting a good review of the proposal. Because you really have to understand that when we do color team reviews as government contractors, we read our proposal. The government doesn't read the proposal, they score the proposal. So this was very eye-opening to the company that we premiered this class with. And as part of the class, we do a group exercise with one of their previously submitted bids. And I created a score sheet from the government evaluator perspective based on the evaluation criteria. And I assigned the class into teams to evaluate different sections of the proposal using the score sheet. And when they were done, many of them found they could not find the items in the score sheet in the proposal, which may have been why this was a losing proposal. But it really opened their eyes to a new perspective. We have to review our proposals as a government evaluator, not as a contractor.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. It's kind of like I write a lot of articles, and I always want other people to read them, because when I reread my own article, I'm not thinking. At that point, I'm just like, I put words in there that aren't in there, missing, right?
We often just drink our own bathwater, and our color team reviews are very ineffective. We're just saying, I like this or I don't like this, rather than saying, wait, if I'm actually scoring this proposal based on the evaluation criteria, can I give this a rating of high in strengths? Or not, or can I not even find things in the proposal?
That sounds like a great tool for companies to use. And I presumably that was in a best value type?
Yes, right. Yes, so, the best value.
Yeah, so Beth, although we're in the era of focus on price and cost a lot, Lohfeld does a lot to support companies who are trying to win best value procurements or capture in that area. Can you talk a little about how companies can improve in that area with regard to best value?
I think everything we've been talking about comes down to the fact that you really need to institutionalize capture and proposal management as defined, repeatable, measured processes. This is a factory. You have the capture side, you have the proposal side. We actually had our core team come up with a list of 20 ineffective practices that we have seen for years and years and put them together. And we've got 10 of each for capture. We're talking, you know, a helter-skelter capture process. You have to define your process. You have to make it repeatable, and you have to enforce people using it. It's great if you have it documented, but if it's sitting on a shelf and nobody uses it, then it's useless. And the more consistently you use and execute this, the better results you're going to have. You need to have customer knowledge. No customer knowledge on your side doesn't mean your competition isn't out there talking with the customer. Bob has a favorite saying, best informed wins. If you don't have any customer knowledge, then you have to be realistic about your chances of winning.
Right, and that's why a lot of you mentioned earlier, like a lot of poor proposals. You don't really understand the customer or the customer needs or the customer focus.
When we do studies on what are the key performance indicators that predict win, customer knowledge, customer understanding is the number one correlated activity with win rate.
Spending time early on developing your solution, not delaying that, not getting to red team and going, oh my gosh, you know, like Lisa said, we can't find our strengths. We can't find the solution in there. It's got to be done early. Forgetting the competitive analysis, ignoring your competition, that's a killer right there. Not doing the price to win analysis. Nothing worse than working for months on something and realize that you've made no progress in figuring out what the price to win is going to be, or even if you can. Not vetting your subcontractors. We were talking about that earlier before the show. Not working with your subs to make sure that they've checked their past performances and going to make sure that you're going to get good responses from the government. Waffling on resource commitments. If you're not going to go out all out on putting together the team you need to win, then don't go after it. Save your resources for something where you're going to have a chance and where you have enough to go after it. Bad bid decisions. Bob's written a number of articles on that. There are some companies that have never met an RFP that they don't think they could go after. But one way to increase your win rate is to stop going after the losers and really having a disciplined process of knocking out the ones you're not going to go after. And then not using capture tools. You know, gone are the days of an Excel spreadsheet or a notepad. You've got to have the tools out there to do the work. So those are some of the major items. Go ahead.
So Bob, I was going to ask you, in this market, I wanted to ask about small business a little bit, just, you know, from your perspective, you know, there's a lot more set asides these days, at least on the task orders and on these multiple award contracts. There's a lot of focus on small business. So that's a good thing, but there's still is that big focus on price and driving down price, and small business margins are not, you know, and their resources aren't as great as the bigger companies. In this market, sort of what's your advice as for a sort of a effective capture management, you know, strategy for a small business concern? It's hard to answer because it's pretty generic, but go ahead.
Now, when we talk to companies, we tell them it's really imperative that they execute a good capture, understand the customer, and then create reasons why their company is differentiated amongst the other competitors. And we show these as strengths in the proposal. The rationale for that is the more strengths we can show, the more we differentiate our customer, the less likely the government is to default to a price, lowest price wins. So in these procurements, if we don't work really hard to show how well we're able to accomplish the work for the customer, we leave the customer with no alternative but to go to price. So we say avoid that technical acceptability floor, play above it, and show them how great you can really be as a partner with the customer.
And in a best value trade-off, it makes it a lot easier for the source selection authority to pick you if your strengths far outnumber everybody else.
Right. You know, one of the observations these days is that although LPTA isn't used as widely as some have commented in the past, you know, do you see best values as a default, a low price, technically acceptable as the overall?
We do. And when I asked the government, I asked contracting officer, why did you go to low price? And They said because we got the requirements from the performing side of the organization and they were okay with it. And I go to the performing side and say, why did you let them go at a low price? And they says, because all of you in industry look alike to us. There's mm-hmm. no differentiation. The only thing left is price. So we come back to our clients and say, we must differentiate ourselves among the other competitors. We have to show them that there's value above lowest price.
And as key to that success, and I mean, that's a great point. So I guess you should take one or two approaches, right? You could be the low price
right.
and look like everybody else, or you can differentiate yourself from others, and you might not necessarily be the low price, and you might win on a trade-off. Is that really understanding your customer to know what the right strategy for a particular best value procurement?
It is very much, because what is you believe is value may not be what your customer believes is value. So you have to be in lockstep with what they want. It's also a commentary about the market. The whole IT market has moved itself in a significant way towards more of a commodity offering.
Sure.
And we're seeing companies just deliberating whether they want to be in the market. And Lockheed Martin has talked about whether they want to continue in this market or divest the
their
segment
services,
of their business.
Yeah.
So with this emphasis on pricing, it has a long-term detrimental effect that we begin driving some of the smarter players out of the market. They'll seek to go somewhere else. And
right.
long-term, that's not good for the country. It's not good for the industry.
Right, well, on that happy note, we've run out of time on the show. I want to thank my guests today, Bob Lohfeld, Beth Wingate, and Lisa Paith. They are of Lohfeld Consulting here in Washington, D.C., and they support government contractors in their capture management, proposal writing, all aspects of winning out there in the marketplace. I want to thank them again for being on the show. You've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.